Chapter 22, Lowering the Shield. December 8th, Mirth. Buck Lee and Willie Bob were wary of the hero's clairvoyance, but dutifully began preparing for the arrival of about 70 people. Stavius and Versera insisted that the King, Preacher, and General Jeremy would be arriving in 3 days with 8 soldiers from home and 60 volunteers from other towns. All their preparations were in place, so Versera decided to make a hut for the dignitaries while Buck Lee and Willie Bob gathered enough food for a feast. General Jeremy crept up to their camp and was shocked to see the 4 of them brazenly walking about and cooking in plain view of the sentries. "What in the name of Mars are y'all doing?" he hissed. Willie Bob laughed and explained about Versera's magic screen. General Jeremy made a thorough inspection of their camp and declared it safe. 10 minutes later, his tiny army joined them and was invited for a hearty meal. Preacher uttered the phrases sinful and blasphemy several times regarding the blatant use of magic, but ate 2 bowls of the delicious stew nonetheless. Narayana had already told the general about his soldiers' harassment tactics, and he planned to have half his troops add to the confusion while the rest prepared for the primary attack. Stavius asked if his troops should rest this first night, but General Jeremy was adamant. He said, "We're going to hit 'em tonight. I ain't waiting one more day before bringing our brothers and sisters home." He left to prepare his troops for the attack and took Willie Bob and Buck Lee with him. Versera could hear them asking each other how the prophecy heroes could communicate over such vast distances. She was sure that their tales would spread and grow among the rest of the troops. This would typically annoy her, but it would probably give them some much-needed confidence before the impending battle. "Okay, so we have an army of sorts, and we have magical energy. Now, how are we going to get through that shield?" asked Stavius. Terra said, "Someone needs to tunnel under the shield and then steal one of the talismans to bring it down." Janus looked at her and said, "Terra, you know that's solid rock underneath us. I could transform sections of it to sand so we could dig it out, but that would take weeks and require far more magic than we have available." Terra pulled a folded sheet of parchment out of her pack and smiled. "No, we're going to tunnel using this." The 5 travelers stared at the 4-foot square, unfolded sheet, and Stavius said, "Terra, if this has anything to do with trigonometry, I swear by the wrath of Mars I will strike you with lightning." Versera laughed so hard she snorted, but Terra replied, "Well, I wasn't planning on using a trig function, but I suppose we could if you prefer, Mark." "No!" everyone emphatically said in unison. The parchment in front of them appeared to be a large sheet of graph paper with space for writing on it. She explained with pride, "I spent years crafting this artifact. There is nothing else like it in the world. It solves and graphs any XY equation written in the space at the bottom for values of X between 0 and a specified length in feet." She wrote an equation in one box, the number 20 in another, and a parabola appeared on the graph paper in the middle. She seemed proud of her graphing tool, but the rest of the team was unimpressed. The best reaction Stavius could muster was, "I wouldn't mind having that in math class." Versera groaned, "So what? I have an app on my phone that can do that. What's the big deal?" Terra grinned and said, "But can your phone app do this?" She carefully placed the paper on the ground with the y-axis pointing away from them into the woods and pressed the X on the bottom left corner of the sheet. They felt a whoosh of air as the graph in the middle of the page vanished and a square hole appeared in its place. Janus looked up and saw a corresponding, perfectly square, 3-foot-wide hole in the woods 20 feet away. "Go on and try climbing through. This extends 5 feet below the surface and will be your tunnel under the shield. I programmed a shallow parabola, but I could use a sine function instead of a quadratic equation if you prefer," kidded Terra. "No, this will do fine," Stavius assured her as he began to slide through the tunnel. He did not want anything more to do with trigonometry. The tunnel was tight, but that was okay because he had to wedge himself against the smooth walls to chimney out the far side. Stavius crawled through in just over a minute, and Terra took a deep breath when he was safely out the other end. She pressed the X on the parchment again, and the hole disappeared as though it had never existed. Tara warned that this spell required considerable power and she could only maintain it for a few minutes. That meant there would just be time to sneak one or two people across before the field collapsed. None of them wanted to imagine what would happen if it closed while someone was in there. "It would be faster if we could just run through," suggested Narayana. "Can you just make it graph a straight line through the shield?" "No, I'm afraid not," sighed Tara. "This can't tunnel through a magical energy field. We need to program a curve over, under, or around that shield."
Everyone was anxious by the time the sky had darkened. General Jeremy sent troops every 20 minutes or so to randomly throw rocks at the shield anywhere except midway between the towers. They would flee before the sentries dashed to an attacked area, only to find it quiet. It was sort of like the doorbell ringing pranks that the annoying kid who lives up the street from Mark likes to do.
General Jeremy saw Stavius's quizzical expression when he gave his order and explained his strategy after his troops departed. He said, "You see, the most logical place to attack is right there in the middle where the wall is the weakest, so we're not going to draw attention to that area."
"Yeah, but we're not going in there," said Janice, who was confused. "Our plan is for Stavius, Elisa, and I to sneak under the force field near the Green Tower. Then I steal the talisman, just like I did in Admion Castle, which will drop the shield on this end of the farm. Your troops are going to charge in right next to the tower where the field is completely gone, not in the middle."
General Jeremy laughed and said, "I know that, and y'all know that, but that garrison commander over there is getting mighty suspicious about why her troops are never being sent to the weakest spot in the shield. I'm letting her think she's clever and hoping that she'll stage her forces in the wrong place." The travelers were very impressed, but General Jeremy laughed and said, "Kids, I've been doing this a long time, and perhaps so has that garrison commander. It might work or it might not, but it's worth a try. By the way, I have something for y'all." He walked over to a large duffel bag he had brought from town and pulled out Narayana's bow and arrows, Stavius's sword, and their confiscated belongings. "The king keeps saying that he's not going to arm y'all, but he ain't never said that I can't. I figure I'll be forgiven if we win, and it won't matter none if we don't. Either way, I sure am looking forward to fighting with y'all instead of against you." Time seemed to drag on forever, but finally General Jeremy gave the signal for the heroes to burrow under the wall and for his troops to get into position. Narayana and Versera were furious that they weren't going through the tunnel, but Tara pointed out that their skills would be far more valuable after the shield came down and the fighting began. Stavius and Elisa were there to protect Janice while he disabled the talisman.
Tara moved as close to the shield as she could and placed the parchment on the ground. The energy of the shield was affecting her spell, so she needed to pull it back a few feet. Tara erased her writing and wrote a new equation. Y equals 5 times the quantity x divided by 16 minus 1 squared minus 5 and the number 32 in the right-hand box. She explained that this would make the tunnel 5 feet deep and 32 feet long to ensure it reached the other side.
She warned them, "Remember that it's 12 feet longer this time, and there are 3 of you going through. You really need to move fast. Oh, and one more thing. I can't do this more than once. Stavius recharged me just now, but I'll be drained and he'll be on the other side of the shield. I guess what I'm saying is that there's no way back once you're over there if you can't get that shield down."
"Great, now she tells us," grumbled Janice.
"I'll go if you want to back out," offered Narayana.
Janice waved her off and said, "No, I'm the only one who knows how to disengage the talisman safely. Besides, I kind of guessed this was going to happen. We'll be fine."
Tara counted to 3, pressed the X, and quietly but urgently hissed, "Go!"
Stavius dove into the tunnel first and began crawling and slithering his way through. His anxiety made this trip seem to take much longer than his practice run.
He clambered out and reached down to help Janice climb out. Elisa was close behind but having difficulty climbing up the slippery slope. The boys saw sparks begin to dance on the lip of the tunnel and reached down to grab her hands. They pulled hard and the tube dissipated with a snap just as her feet cleared the end. They were inside the slave farm, but there was no time to rest. The night was dark, but they were standing in the open, so they quickly scurried to the side of the tower. General Jeremy's troops began casting rocks at the shield halfway around the farm, which was the signal for them to enter the tower.
Elisa and Stavius burst into the structure with their weapons raised, knowing that there would be guards inside, but unsure of their number. The gods must have been on their side because only two soldiers were there, although there were tables and benches for many more. The two heroes surprised the soldiers and subdued them before they could sound an alarm. A minute later, Stavius leaned outside and waved Janus in. Elisa guarded the door while Janus and Stavius inspected the talisman. It looked like an ornate box resting on a 3-foot-tall pedestal. It was emitting a soft green glow and gave off crackling static sparks whenever the boys came too close. Janus was on his third lap around the pedestal when Elisa leaned in and whispered, "Hurry up! The other guards are returning!" Stavius said, "Come on, man! Stop messing around and turn this thing off!" Janus looked at him and said, "I have some terrible news, Stavius. This setup is nothing like the one in Admion Castle. Not only can't I find the off button, but the thing zaps me if I get too close. I can't turn it off. I'm sorry, but I don't know what to do." Janus was frozen with indecision, and they could now hear the guards approaching. Stavius quickly handed his sword to his friend and commanded, "Go help Elisa. I'll figure this out." Janus grabbed the sword and raced to help Elisa while Stavius considered his options. This didn't take long because there weren't many. He could do nothing and they'd be slaughtered while their friends were stuck on the other side of the shield. He could forcibly remove the talisman and either die when he touched it or die when it exploded from being moved while on. The Septumkelans had to have a way to remove and replace it safely, and it must be elsewhere in the room instead of on the pedestal. Stavius began frantically searching the walls and floors for any indications of a control panel and made sure that his illusion vision was turned off to expose any hidden compartments. He found a stash of poosh and a few piles of valuables hidden by the guards, but no secret control panel, and he was out of time. The guards had reached the door and his friends were fighting them off, but the alarm had sounded. "Give me as much time as you can," he shouted to his friends, but they were too busy fighting to respond, and he wasn't sure if they'd heard him. He only had one option left. He wasn't sure if he could do it, but he had to try. He needed to drain a talisman which had been absorbing magical energy for centuries. He couldn't fathom how much energy was stored in that relic, and it terrified him that it was soon going to be flowing through him. But he didn't have a choice. Stavius tried his best to get into a meditative state because both Versera and Terra had repeatedly explained that stress and tension acted like resistance or friction, which would generate more heat and pain as the energy passed through his body. However, settling into a relaxed state is nearly impossible when you are facing near-certain death under a tight deadline while an intense sword fight rages a few yards away. "Can you please keep it down over there? I'm trying to concentrate!" Stavius yelled as he reached deep into the ground to try to connect with the energy flow he had been coaxing to the surface for the past week. Janus yelled back, "Sorry, buddy, but it isn't us. It's the horde of Septumkelans out here. They're just so rude and inconsiderate." Stavius felt a sudden release as he laughed and reached for the talisman. Then the energy arc nearly blew him off his feet. Mark's family had gone to the Outer Banks of North Carolina last summer for 2 weeks by the ocean. Mark discovered body surfing and had spent hours diving in the waves. One day, Mark caught an exceptionally rough wave. He jumped a little too soon, and when the wave broke over him, it thrashed him in its churn. He was slammed to the bottom and then picked up and repeatedly flipped. His ears were filled with the roar of the sea, and his skin was sandblasted with sandy water. He felt nothing but searing pain and complete confusion of which way was up, with no idea how long he had been under. This felt eerily similar, but a million times worse. The magical energy felt like it burned his palms as it entered his hands, seared his nerves as it coursed through his body, and charred his feet as it flowed into the ground. The pain was so great that he had forgotten to breathe and nearly passed out. He came to his senses before that happened and gulped in a huge lungful of air. The air felt so fresh and crisp in his aching lungs that he momentarily forgot about the magic, and his pain disappeared.
Stavius stood there with his eyes closed, focusing on his breathing until he felt enough in control to think about what he was doing. He could almost visualize the power flowing through and around his body, but he felt nothing more than a throbbing hum as it passed. Once or twice, Stavius felt a slight panic, almost as though he was losing his balance, when he thought about the amount of energy coursing through him, but he regained control.
His natural reaction was to tense up and fight for control, but that had the opposite effect. Stavius had to force himself to relax to maintain control. He finally attained a level of calmness where he was able to open his eyes and look around the room. A 2-foot-wide bolt of green energy was arcing from the talisman through him to the ground. Smaller sparks and lightning bolts were showering off his arms and shoulders. He removed his hands from the talisman, and the energy flow continued as he turned to face the door. "Get out of the way!" he commanded in a low voice.
Alisa and Janice glanced back, took one look at him, and dove away from the door. Stavius raised his right arm, blasted a bolt of energy outside, and the company of soldiers was just gone. He said, "Let's bring this shield down," closed his eyes, and actively pulled on the talisman energy he had been fighting to slow. The talisman and the room were dark a moment later, and the near side of the shield collapsed.